Center. For those who aren't familiar, this is a four-yard draft system where you can actually go up for as much or as little of the draft gear that you want to try. Have about 40 some tabs, lots of different shoes that you can sample. It's kind of like attending a mini beer festival every single day of the week. And also you can go try for the doors as well. So make sure to stop in and check out First Draft Tavern and Kitchen. Killer lineup of beers. I know right now they've got Dorothy from Home Farms. They've got tons of clean beer from Crooked Steak from our recent tap takeover. Lots of fun stuff. I know Wellworks was just tapped. And also No Machine. So lots of great local stuff. We've got some national stuff as well. Check out First Draft Tavern and Kitchen. Great food itself. And that's a great segue. We're jumping right into it with our co-host. We've got Hunter Condon back in the co-host seat along with Jesse from Steve. Jesse,
Hunter,
how do you do? I think Hunter's starting to make his own sound effects. So that's always a great
whammy.
But we're also even more thankful to be joined by Marty Jones. Marty, what would you say your title actually is?
I don't know, gadfly, man about beer town, I don't know.
Jack of all trades.
Promoter, publicist, flag waver, media tickler, idea guy.
Marty Jones is really
a miscreant.
Hunter nailed it on the head. I think Marty Jones is one of those beer legends. He's not a pussy here in Colorado. He's done a little of everything, and we're excited to jump right in with Marty.
Yes. It's on the dilettante, I guess, is the right word.
Yeah. For those who aren't familiar, you are responsible for some of the most iconic phrases in the craft beer scene. We'll start there, just because I think that's something that people can relate to. You know, great divides, great minds, drink alike, indulgence, contents, and pleasure, entrepreneurs, and beer wines. Those are some, just some to name of many, many of you. You're a master of puns.
This is great. I'm having a good time already, I must say.
Tell us how you got into the craft beer scene here in Colorado to begin with, and take us along the journey.
Yeah, well, I was a home brewer back in Virginia in the 80s while going to school, and I worked with some Irish guys that turned me on to Guinness Stout, and that was sort of an awakening for me, and I had a cousin who married a guy who was an heir to the Ballantine Ale family and Ballantine IPA. When we'd go to North Carolina for the summer, we'd drink Ballantine IPA, and those two beers really changed my life in a significant way. And then I was a musician, and while trying to get someone to do publicity for my band, the publicist in Nashville said, "That's the best pitch I've ever received from a band. You should be a publicist." And I thought, okay. So then I went to school and got an English degree, and part of that degree was to get a story published. So since I was a home brewer, I had a story published about beer in the local paper, and all of those things kind of collided to get me an English degree, and I started writing about beer in North Virginia, which was my hometown. And I met a professor who taught feature writing, because I was playing harmonica in the stairwell of the Arts and Letters building because the reverb was really good, and that was a sort of life-changing moment. I know, I'm jumping all around, but a lot of little things added up to get me into beer. And then my wife's mom had moved here, and her sister and their kids, so when we both got out of school at Old Dominion University, she said, "Why don't we move to Colorado?" And so we moved here, and my goal was to get in the beer business somehow, or try to make a living as a writer. And so I wrote about beer, and then made the shift, kind of with Brian Dunn, a great divide, to helping breweries write their stories, doing publicity and stuff, and then it kind of took off from there. That was a terrible scattershot recap of my life, but
that's incredible. I mean, it's really interesting that you kind of mentioned Great Divide. I think they do such a great job of telling the story of these characters. And, you know, they have these iconic characters like Hercules and Titan. Those are kind of all the Yeti. Were you involved in kind of shaping those characters at all?
No, the beers, you know, those were Brian's things. But I was the first guy to do publicity for them. My band was rehearsing in Great Divide upstairs, and for a while in the main room that was, the walls were lined with 12 inches of cork. It had been a yogurt place. And anyway, a lot of bands rehearsed there long before we did. But so I just pitched him, offered to help him get some publicity. And then along with that, I said, why don't I get your slogan? And I've always been a fan of words and puns, and I cut my musical teeth in a musical comedy group in Northern Virginia. We did parodies of songs, and I said, how do I get your slogan? So he said, sure, give it a shot. And I came up with Great Minds Drink Alike with a little help from my wife, and that was my first, you know, sort of brewery slogan. It was a big deal, and I can remember, you know, Brian's wife saying, really, do you want, like, $200 for that? How long did it take you? And a friend of mine said, your answer is all your life.
Awesome. I have to ask, what year was that?
That was probably about 1997, maybe?
Okay, so I'm not going to date you.
98?
I'm going to say, when I moved to Denver, it was the first time I'd seen the slogan about 5 years ago, and it was Instagram had just come out, it was becoming popular, and I was at a bar and I saw those posters come out. It's kind of on a date, I guess, kind of. I didn't get a lot of dates back then. Anyway, we bust out the poster and we just started taking selfies with it and whatnot. That was the first time we'd seen it, and we loved it.
Oh, how cool!
It was only 5 years ago. That's
fine. Wow!
Yeah, 5 years ago at Beat Street Station in Denver.
Oh, that's so cool!
And I acted as if it was the first time I'd seen it.
So oh, that's cool!
To 2012.
And you lived here all that time?
I'm born and raised in Fort Collins. I'm only 28.
Huh?
But that was the first time I really picked up the scene, that slogan.
Oh, how cool!
So it's a legendary slogan. It's
all that's cool. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I'm really glad they keep using it. It is really cool to be a part of it.
Yeah.
I love that brewery and what all they've done. They've been so successful. They've really made great beer along the way. They've never diluted their beer or their message, and they push boundaries, and they're just a great outfit, and I'm a huge fan of Brian and all they've done, so it's really flattering they keep using it.
Absolutely. I think, you know, one of the other kind of distinctions that I always think of with you is that you're a champion for Colorado craft beer. Can you tell us a little bit about the evolution of the craft beer scene in Colorado and kind of how you've interplayed with all of that, how you've interacted with the growth of craft beer here in this great state of Colorado?
Yeah. Well, when I first moved here, I would read Dick Kreck's column. He was the beer columnist for the Denver Post, and his title was Mr. Beer, and I thought, that is the greatest title. That's the greatest job title ever. So that was, he set a benchmark to shoot for, but I got here and started working for Celebrated Beer News. I was a Rocky Mountain correspondent, and then long before, I don't know if you guys ever heard of Microsoft Sidewalk. It was like long before Yelp, and it was one of the first, it was Microsoft's ahead of their time effort to do restaurant reviews, and so I pitched my services to them. They kind of headhunted some guys from the Rocky Mountaineers and the Denver Post and put a lot of money in Sidewalk, and they were city guides, sort of like AOL city guides in the 90s. And so I started working there as a weekly book columnist, and there weren't really very many people that wrote about me every week there. So, but I guess to answer your question about the flag waving, I moved here for the beer because I was just blown away by craft beer and its possibilities and the culture. And the first brew pub I ever stepped into was the Windcook when I came here on a visit. I attended the Great American Beer Festival on my honeymoon here in Denver from Virginia. And my wife, we just celebrated our 25th anniversary.
Congratulations.
Beer has been a key glue to keeping us together. It's hugely romantic.
Yeah, so we're all on anniversary zero right now.
Is that right? Well,
right.
Stick with beer, it will help you.
Right.
But I came from a place where there was no beer culture. And the idea, if you went to someone and said, I'm going to open a brewery in Northern Virginia, people would say, why? And we had Bud Miller, because we've got all the beer you need right here. And I came here and was just amazed. There were people like John Hickenlooper and Eric Warner at Tabernash and other places. And the guys at Rock Bottom who were making beer on site, and you could meet the brewer and drink their beer. It was unlike anything I'd ever encountered. I have goosebumps right now, I think, because it's still really one of the coolest freaking things in the world in life.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, I just thought, like a lot of brewers, we knew that if we helped each other out, the trade, we had a long way to go, we were just doing a scratching the surface, so let's help each other out and flourish. And thankfully that ethos still is in place for the most part today, you know.
Yeah, forgive our kind of novice approach to it, we're still a little bit young to the scene. But to take us back to those early days of Windcoop, I know that you were with Windcoop for a while and you did a lot of publicity for them.
Yeah.
Tell us about your role at Windcoop, and I know that you were involved in kind of helping to build up their canning program, and then also you brought the Rocky Mountain Oyster Stout to prominence.
My one shining moment. Well, I've been a consultant for them, thanks in large part to Luke Cady. He was John Hickenlooper's first PR guy, an idea guy. He's a hero of mine. He passed away a few years ago. He was just an irreverent, funny guy, one of the quirkiest and most intelligent people I've ever known. He created the Beer Drink of the Year contest, and one of the other beers at the Dan's Mixed Drinks, is that
Don's
Mixed Drinks. He said, I'm going to give up. I'm going to leave the Beer Drink of the Year. I'm going to stop doing it. Would you like to take it over? So that's how I got affiliated with the Wincoop. And I know Hickenlooper just, I mean, you, in my early days, I wrote a review of Wincoop in which I did not praise the beers. And very impressively, Hickenlooper, when he wasn't a politician, he got in touch with me and said, I'd like to talk to you because I've not heard those kind of comments before. And he met me at Broadway Brewing, which was, you know, now, it was on, remember, you guys weren't. But Broadway Brewing was in an, it's in an apartment building now by where Snarf's sub shop is.
Oh, okay.
So that little apartment building next door was Broadway Brewing, and they were a pioneer in the city. And they had a bottling line, and they made their own beer, and they bottled whiskey. So I met him there, and we talked about beer, and I just thought that was the coolest thing. Rather than being angry, he wanted to hear what I had to say. And he said, I appreciate your candor, and thank you for doing that. And that was another way I sort of got connected with the brewery. But when he became a politician and left, and he was a master idea guy. And you talk about somebody who wanted to lift our boats. You know, they opened down in Logo, and there's nothing there. You know, porn shops and drug dealers and people like Tom Waits lived down there. You know, it was terrible. I love Tom Waits. But he made a point of promoting other businesses in the Wincoop. I don't think anybody had ever done that before in downtown. Even his team thought he was nuts. He said, no, we need to help these local businesses so we can all flourish. He was an ambassador for that kind of thinking, you know, one of the early people. So when he left, and then Luke Cady retired, they had lost some of their mojo. So, and I had been at Oscar Blues for 7 years. I was itching to do something new. And so I just sort of offered my services there, and they wanted to start packing beer. So I helped them pack it to beer. And my job was to sort of help them reclaim some of that mojo they had lost when they were Brainiac, Hickenlooper, and move on to other things. You know, and the Wincoop had gone through a phase where their beers maybe weren't as good as they used to be. And the management was sort of was thinking more about food and money and not beer. And so they needed someone to come in and that was focused on beer. So I helped them get Andy Brown on board as a brewer. He was a, you know, magnificent brewer, great credibility from left hand. He started changing up the recipe and changing the name for some of the beers just to get them, retire some sacred cows that were just dead in the field, you know?
Sure. So, now, you touched a little bit about Oscar Blues. That was a, you know, you helped start the canning revolution there, and then you brought it to Wincoop. Can you tell us kind of the perspective of the growth of the rise of canning in beers, and, you know, kind of how you've seen that movement evolve over time?
Well, it's been incredible. I mean, it's really, rarely in any trade you get an opportunity to change the culture you love in a significant fashion, you know. So this was a really wonderful thing for me to be a part of. They had bought a cask brewing systems tabletop machine. It was the first, you know, system where a brewer could brew a can on beer and it filled two cans, seeing one can at a time, it would literally sit by the end, you know. And their idea was to use it to draw people from Boulder and Longmont and come up to the brew pub. But I was a brewer journalist and did some research, and their brewer, Brian Lutz, he was the guy that got me on board, invited me on to help, you know, fly the flag in 2002. And it became clear to me that there had been a couple beers that had been out. Craft beers that were in cans, but they were contract brewed by much larger brewers. So we had the distinction of being the first American microbrewer to brew and can their own beer. You know, like Brooklyn had some beer in cans, and there was an outfit from the Midwest that had beer in cans on an airline. So we were the first American microbrewer to brew and can their own beer. So, but it just, we thought it was a really good idea, and I knew it was a bigger story than just let's get people here. So I started pitching it around the country. And then the more we learned, the more angles there were for me, who was a freelance read journalists at the time and knew how to pitch a story because you don't eat and you can't successfully pitch stories to editors, you know, as a journalist. So all those things, I just sort of put those scores together and started landing accolades for it. And that just started building momentum. And a lot of brewers hated us for what we were doing. A lot of people thought that it was really sacrilegious. I remember getting an email from a sales guy from a brewery in the Northwest who sent me an email that said, I look forward to the day your company fails and goes bankrupt and you disappear from what you're doing to craft beer by suggesting you should put beer in a can. How was this?
They were just trying to get to macro bloggers, or what was their anger?
They thought we were cheapening what, you know, our predecessors had worked so hard to build up by putting beer in a brown bottle, you know, and getting that distinguished package. But, you know, the fact, part of the issue was you could buy a small bottling line, but you couldn't buy a small canning line when microbrewers started. So cask filled a very important niche. You know, none of what we did there would have been possible without them. And, you know, I work with them now, and they have, I mean, it's fun to see brewers who are the Oscar Brewers equivalents in Finland and Sweden and, you know, the North Pole and Kenya and, you know, South America. It's wild. It's happening. It's happening all over. Yeah, I mean, I can remember filling, we took some cans, soaked fat tire labels off of them, put fat tire in the can, see what their terrible oxygen levels,
yes,
and delivered them to Kim Jordan and said, we think this would be a good idea for you. And so, sure, they bought a can.
Several years later, now fat tire's available.
And I would say, you know, we were very, speaking of, you know, sharing information with people, the second year of the JBF, when we were canning, we set up a bus tour that went to the JBF and picked up brewers and took them to Lyons so they could see what we were doing. And Gary Marrero, I remember from Maui Brewing, he was on that bus. Sean O'Sullivan from 21st Amendment. The guys from Krebs Brewing in Nebraska. A lot of people that, you know, we knew we were onto something, but we knew the more people that did it, the less they would look at us like freaks.
Yeah.
So it would be good to get other people in.
Isn't it funny, too, now there's almost a backlash against bottles. There's so many people out there that, due to weight and due to concerns over the quality of the beer in the package, it's almost like bottles are shutting.
Yep.
The chances of way of the future.
It's really dramatically changed, yeah. I mean, you guys probably, I mean, you've seen that happen. The younger drinkers, they grew up with canned craft beer, so now it's just very accepted. Like overseas, they've seen American canned beers, and there's none of the stigma. You know, for us, we would be at a beer festival, people would walk by, and we'd be the only people there with cans. Maybe Scott would be there, and people would walk by, and they'd see the beer, and they'd just smile politely and keep walking to the guy next to us with bottles. You know, we've developed shtick. Have you ever had a canned beer that gave you goosebumps? You know, you ever? Oh, I don't drink canned beer. What? You think the world's flat? Well, come try it. So, we had to be good at creating things to get people's attention.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. Cans are a great practice for beer. As we were talking about earlier, you have to manage that can line. You have to pay attention. It's not a silver bullet. You still have to be vigilant.
It's not just the cans are better for the beer than the bottles. That's how you package that beer. How you treat it when it's, is it refrigerated? How are you shipping it? How is your retailer storing it?
Yes.
Handling the cans before they're filled.
But the great thing about cans is so many people know, they do protect from light, which causes light struck beer. They protect from the ingress of oxygen. There's the most recycled beverage package in the world. There's money in recycling. They're extremely portable. You can take them places and bottles aren't allowed. And now, they're cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, from a sales standpoint, graphic-wise, putting artwork on a can, you can do quite a bit more versus a label wrapped around a bottle.
Yeah. You can make a pipe out of it if you're going to drink.
It is a shame how people in Colorado don't understand how recyclable glass is. It's comparable, and it's the ability to be recycled, and it's still, I think, only like 30% of bottles in the state are recycled.
Terrible, isn't it?
Yeah. People, recycling your bottles.
Yes.
100% recycled. It gets turned right into bottles.
Yes.
Now, on top of all of what you've done in the beer scene, and I think this still definitely ties into that scene, you talked about music. You're still very active with Marty Jones and the Great Unknowns, correct?
Yeah, well, these days I'm shifting more to quieter music. Yeah, I have a solo CD that'll be available. I have a 6-song solo disc that'll be on my website in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Called Nothing to Cry About.
Okay.
So, years ago I developed Tinnitus, you know, ringing of the ears, and it came back after watching the Replacements reunion show at the Fillmore. I'm sorry to say. So I'm shifting to quieter music to protect my hearing. So this is a stripped down to just me and a guitar and a harmonica. But I'm a lifer. I'm going to play music till the day I die.
We
do still play occasionally band gigs.
I love how you were able to tie your two passions together. I know that you worked with one of our supervisors, one of our bosses, Jason, who's running out of Vancouver. But he was telling us about all the great performances you put together during the Craft Brewers Conference over time.
Oh.
And mentioned that you had put together these essentially super bands of brewers. Tell us a little bit about that. Some of the great people that you played music with that were also brewers.
Yeah, so that was a lot of fun. Myself and Greg Copenstone and David Buehler from Alicia just got our heads together during one CBC and said, we should do like a panel together. And, you know, Greg is a sort of, you know, rudimentary guitar player. Dave is a working musician, and I'm one. And so we gave it a musical theme, and we called ourselves the Gordians, sort of inspired by Alicia's great success with Pumpkin Beers. So our first event was the Gordians, and we had Smash Pumpkins before our thing, and we did musical parodies. We did, I think, the first year. Every other year we would do one. We spoofed Janis Joplin's I was, oh, go, won't you buy me? But then, you know, so it became a traditional sort of idea. It's been a great deal of fun. And in Chicago, we achieved the life less feat of having Rick Nielsen of Cheap Trick join us and play a spoof that I put the lyrics together of Surrender. And at the last minute, we discovered, we're trying to find a Chicago band because if I'm talking too much, he's coming. Okay, we're trying to find a Chicago, we always tried to keep it local, you know. So what Chicago band would be relevant? Well, Cheap Trick is in Illinois, so, okay. Well then, 4 days before the CBC, Greg calls me and says, you know, Rick Nielsen is a partner. No, there's one of the guys at Cheap Trick is a partner in Peace Brewing Company in Chicago.
Yeah, the pizza brewery.
So we called them and they said, yeah, it's not Robin Zander, it's Rick Nielsen. So I said, well, what do you think he would be in for joining us in a song, you know? So, I mean, an insane idea. He said, I know what he got. I said, the lyrics to promote it, but don't give your beer away. And he said it to Rick. And then, the day before the CBC started, he called and said, I'll do it. Well, Rick will do it as long as you pay his limo ride from where he lives. Champagne. And so we looked at Greg because he was the guy with the box, you know. So Greg paid his limo driver, and he showed up 30 minutes before our segment. And we did a spoof of his greatest song of all time. What musician would do that? Was he not the coolest guy? You wouldn't see Kanye West show up to like spoof his greatest hit. Or anybody, you know. But yeah, so it's been a tradition. And we had Alice Cooper's guitar player join us 1 year in San Diego. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Jason, actually, he did a song with me.
That's right.
Yeah, we spoofed... The ceiling song, Craft Brew.
Oh.
It's a wonderful time for a beer to know they need a craft brew.
That's awesome.
Jason play guitar. Yeah. Baby, baby, that beer is tasting so bad. I can give you beer better than you had.
Oh man, I think we might need Martin to just create an intro. We don't have intro music, so
it's your show now.
Yeah, it's good. I got
a harmonica. I'm Martin Eagle's show. We really appreciate having us on and enjoying the play. This is incredible.
It's really fun to be able to talk about it. Well, you guys know, I mean, this is the greatest trade. Well, I don't know. It's a really great trade.
Changed the degree was my mind. saw something and I started, you know, hanging around, meeting people. I'm like, I want to be a part of this. I knew right away. So I changed my minor in beverage management. Fame, whatever you want to call it. I got a job at AC Golden. Got to meet Jason Zucrunen. And packaging as an attempt worker. Worked my way up and was an assistant brewer, still part time. But then even just by doing that, I met like unbelievable people. I met Jesse and Chris and John from Called Arms. I started following them because they're breweries in my neighborhood. So I started following these guys and like read about their background. I'm like, these are cool guys. This is actually before I ever even knew I had a job ratio. I was like, I'm going to go try and meet these guys. So I followed them out over to Star Bar, which they had their very first tapping. It was the very first piece of assist beer that they did with Cannonball. And I was like, oh,
piece of assist?
Piece of assist.
Oh, what a great beer. Yeah, that's a great time
right up the alley.
That's awesome.
It's
fantastic.
It's fantastic.
That's awesome.
Went on over, waited for my window. They're right behind me. They had a booth or something. They were carrying around for donations. There was a mountain top. Close the gates in Denver. There you go. And he's come behind me. I would boo and ask him to donate. I was like, yes. And by the way, it's my first beer to have on each week. So I was like, thank you guys. You're doing this great. I worked at the bar. I worked at this spot called Local 46. It's about a block away from them. And I was just happy to like see that flourish. That's just like the case, you know, now right now in Denver is that it is. Might have stalled out for a little bit, but there's always great breweries popping up, and everyone really wants to help each other and come together. And I'm grateful to be a part of it. Like I said, I changed my minor for whatever the fifth, sixth time in school.
You regret those changes in any time?
Not the slightest bit. I don't know what could have been. I was trying to be a teacher. That was my vision.
But you are a teacher.
In a sense.
Teaching people how to drink beer.
In a sense.
Live life more than the fullest.
I've always been into education and studying history. My first degree was history. So I think it's like knowledge, but now I've acquired somewhat of a minor beer knowledge, and I really do enjoy spreading it. And at the same time, learning. I mean, like, a scholar is always a scholar. You never can stop learning. So, you know, meeting Tristan from Porch Drinking, and then now working with me at Ratio, I meet people along the way that continue to help bring me up, RDU, and hearing stories about you before we have actually sat down and had like an actual event together. I knew about you a lot.
Don't believe any of
it.
Be as happy in your job as you guys are right
now. Oh, totally. It's pretty rare. I don't walk into Called Arms and see Jesse sad when I'm bothered.
Yeah. I'll stop heavily in the office.
I'm just crying. Whenever I'm bothered. I always see some Jesse sad when we were at events. He's like, why haven't you come in to visit me?
Yeah.
I'm gonna miss you guys.
You know, every 2 weeks now, we're doing these podcasts. It's been great.
It really does. This industry brings people together, and I personally was just talking to friends about it. You know, I haven't had a job, and I've had many jobs for the past few years, but I've had a job like this where, the only kind of stress is the kind of stress that you put on yourselves because you want to make the brewery that you're working for better. And, everything else is part of the greatness that is the craft beer industry. It's a beautiful industry to work in. It's great people that are really passionate about this industry. We're at a point where people are becoming more knowledgeable. People are really understanding craft beer a lot more, and they're appreciating it. We're getting to a point where we can give back and support our local communities. It's not to continue, not to be too cheesy or anything, but I feel like we really are some of the luckiest people in the world.
We really are, yeah. And sometimes I think it's important to remember that, we're not teaching people how to read or, getting people out of jail who've been unjustly charged. There are jobs that are ahead where my wife is a victim's advocate. She deals with people dealing with the worst circumstance of their life. But what we're doing on the cultural side is really big, and it makes the world or our community a better place, just like people that play music,
Absolutely.
It really makes life much more enjoyable. And what brings people together better than chatting over a good beer?
Listening to music.
Listening to music, three top things right there.
Speaking Draft Tackle Kitchen, who are the great sponsors of this Porchcast. We're really excited for them. They've got a lot of events lined up. They just had an event with them today, showcasing some of the non-wild and sour beers that Save's putting out. But also coming up in the month of December, they've got Cerebral's first tap takeover happening here at First Draft. So be sure to check out their Facebook page. Keep an eye out on that. Also a reminder, if you like what you're listening, be sure to follow us on Facebook and on Twitter, at PorchDrinkingCO on Twitter, and on Instagram. And also be sure to follow us on Facebook. We'll be sure to post updates for the Porchcast throughout. Feel free to tweet us and ask us any questions. We're happy to answer those on air. So, Thanksgiving's coming up. By the time this episode is actually published, it'll probably be either right before Thanksgiving or on Thanksgiving. Do you all have any traditions in terms of some of the beers that you drink, or maybe traditions in terms of must-have dishes at your Thanksgiving meal?
Lately, my current addition is Sourdough IPA from Griffin's Ferry.
Okay.
I have to say, this is really my favorite local beer these days. It's so good. I'm so glad to have it on tap.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I like to eat oysters at Thanksgiving, if possible.
Yeah.
As an East Coast guy, that's a tradition that it's hard to find them out here.
Family tradition, or is that a whole statewide tradition?
Well, I grew up on the East Coast. My uncle had a seafood business, so to get a bushel of seaside oysters up from the ocean side of the Eastern Shore, they're really salty and bracing. And you just roast them outside on the grill, it's freezing, you can see your breath. You drink a beer and you crack some oysters.
Awesome.
They pop open on the grill, they shut them all out of the shell.
That sounds great. Yeah. My dad's from Virginia Beach.
Oh, no, that's where I grew up, Virginia Beach and Norfolk.
Yeah, he went to Princess Anne High School.
Oh, wow, I went to Kensler, that's so cool.
That's awesome.
He's probably had some oysters in his
life. Yeah, he's taught me the way.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I should have grown up. Maybe it's because of his heritage, but when I hear about people talking about oysters like you do,
that's one of the things I miss.
Turn this podcast off to be
What about you, Jesse? What's your tradition?
Shoot, man. Really drinking. That's pretty deeply rooted. My mom moved up to Erie a couple years back, so it's really, really nice having the closest member of my family 40 minutes away.
That is great.
So we get together as often as we can. So this Thanksgiving, just get together, hang out, take it easy, relax, think about family, and probably call our family back east and drink beer.
Yeah. Are you eating must-have dishes at your Thanksgiving meal?
I don't really have that. We're pretty untraditional. Like, if we want, we'll just make chicken riggies, which is a dish back from home. Or
riggies?
It's a rigatoni dish. One Thanksgiving, we couldn't get to Albany, which is where our family was in upstate New York, so we ended up at a gas station getting pizza. So we're like completely not like bound to any traditions, but I really like stuffing, and I'm a big fan of cranberries.
This is your week,
right? And I'm also going to come out there and say, I wrote a letter to Hot Pockets about 10 years ago. Probably about 15 years ago, actually. And I wrote them and said, you should make a Thanksgiving Hot Pocket with like stuffing as the crust and corn niblets and turkey and a little side of cranberry. And they wrote me back and they said, Dear Miss Bookstein, because apparently only women would write to Hot Pockets. And they sent me some coupons and said, we don't take outside solicitations, but now
we don't take great ideas.
Yeah, when you go anywhere now, the Thanksgiving sandwich is everywhere, you know, so
they miss the
take that out. Yeah.
They don't put out a Thanksgiving up.
Yeah. There is not. Not yet.
Stuffing, gravy, cranberry sauce, turkey. I'm all about the staples. But yeah, seconds, no pie. I sure wish I had more beer.
Whoa.
Seconds, no pie.
Yeah.
What is this? That's not my dessert. So I'll eat dessert in the morning for breakfast.
I'm not going to lie. I'll get a heat more savory than I get some pie.
More savory. All right. That's a old fashioned gravy casserole.
Oh, really good.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you think that ranks among the side dishes?
Golly gee.
Just shy of bronze.
Solid fourth
place. Well, you know, it's funny. In my family, we're kind of like you, Jesse. We don't have as big beginning of a traditional Thanksgiving approach, coming from parents from Hong Kong and Taiwan. Turkey was not necessarily a staple of our Thanksgiving meal, but rice always was. So this is my first year spending Thanksgiving with my girlfriend's family, and I plan on carrying on the tradition of bringing fried rice.
Awesome.
Homemade fried rice. But yeah, I mean, like, I personally am very traditional. I love the American traditional meal, so I really love turkey. I really love old fashioned creamy casserole, is probably my number one side.
Wow.
It's a little bit odd, out of the box. But I like the rice idea. I think obviously Thanksgiving happened a couple years ago, but
a couple of years ago.
Like I said, I was a history major, and I know for a fact that Thanksgiving happened last year.
Yeah.
But I think it is all about, like, you know, immigrants coming together, sharing, and loving, and caring. And, you know, it doesn't have to be about what the dishes that were served might have been served.
Well, and the Faria is really popular, so what about taking the hot pocket thing and putting it in that?
So like a Thanksgiving burrito.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
El Camino, I think.
That's fusion.
El Camino.
Fusion.
Do you know
that? I love
what's El Camino?
It's my first day of place on here right now.
Yeah?
It's my neighborhood of Faria.
It's on his El Camino soapbox.
And we reached our El Camino segment. Hunter, what's up to El Camino right now?
It's
a generous gotcha.
El
Camino, they're accepting. It's a Mexican restaurant bar. They went to carry other styles of beer. Carry other, I don't know, foods.
Now, Hunter, how close are you to a Thanksgiving spot? How close are you to some of your fried rice to El Camino?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what Thanksgiving is all about.
How close are we to having El Camino as a sponsor on the show?
What are we talking about?
Grant?
Come on, Grant.
And Naya?
Yeah.
Look at him. Still being close.
Alright.
And Marty, you know, one of the great things about having you on the show is kind of fill us in on what you're working on right now. And I know that you're putting together a really great event. Tell us a little bit about Prairie Dogs.
Yes, and the Prairie Dogs, it's an annual fundraiser for Metro Caring. They're downtown Denver. Hunger Relief Organization has been around since the 70s. My mother has been a volunteer there over 30 years. My wife and I have helped for 20 years. We've lived in Denver. It's an event I started at the Winco Brewing Company. It's a celebration of beers in amber to opaque, amber to black categories. So it's been on a slight hiatus, but we're bringing it back. It'll be at the Tivoli Student Union Building in the Turnover Room on December 3rd at 1 o'clock from 1 to 4:30. We have about 60 Colorado, U.S., and a few international beers, all in those categories. All of the money goes to fund the Caring's hunger prevention efforts. It's a really great cause, and I think over the years we did it at Wincoop, and I want to thank the Wincoop for being really supportive of that, because that was an event where we gave 100% of the ticket sales to charity, and that Wincoop paid all the costs.
That's incredible.
That was really big of them. And since I will bring it back, and the Metro King has sort of taken the event back under its own wing, and yeah, I hope a lot of people have come out. It's been great reaching back to brewers who participated before. So that was one of my favorite events of the year. I'm happy to be involved in it. We got some cool breweries that are stepping out.
You know, it's funny that Ratio will be there, and but it's
called
Arms. It's called
Arms. Yeah.
But it's funny that you mentioned that, because one of my really good group of friends, they actually always message me every single year to ask me when Brewery Ducks is taking place.
Oh, wow!
And I had the great honor to notify them that it's coming back. They're really excited that it's coming back. I've attended Brewery Ducks a number of times.
I think that's where I met you.
Yeah,
one of those
I think it was. So really, really excited that this is coming back. And for those people who are interested in attending, how can they get tickets on today?
So if you go to MetroCaring.org, that's Metro Caring's website, there's a page there where you can buy tickets. There's an Eventbrite link as well, so you can buy tickets there. We're going to sell tickets at the event, but we're hoping to sell most of them in advance.
Fantastic.
So you can go to the website, find them there. I do want to thank our sponsors, Cask Brewing Systems, and Microbrewery Finance, Rick Revenue's group. Craft Beer Brewing Magazine has been a big supporter. Westwood is helping us with some ads and a lot of online help.
Fantastic.
And the folks at Tivoli have now stepped in. They're going to help us with some logistics of the event.
That's awesome.
Yeah. A lot of big-hearted people. You know, this is a trade full of big-hearted people.
Yeah,
and we probably give away, you know, we may be too generous at times, but I'm really happy that so many people have come back to this event and stepped up. And Avery's bringing like six different beers, and they're bringing out some secret stuff. And look at Steve's on board, and Katie Bye bringing some cool stuff. You guys are bringing cool stuff, and yeah, it's really, I don't know, it's a nice sort of holiday season when you're feeling kind of warm and fuzzy, and I hope a lot of people will come out. Buy that ticket.
Man, it's going to be a fun event. Dark Wings, what was the date?
December 3rd.
December 3rd, so we can't wait to do this wizard. You'll hold steady on Shadow Knight Smash. Once again, for people who didn't really get it the first time, this is a celebration of amber to dark, you know, big beers. So think of, you know, perfect time for this winter season. Come out to Brady Darks. Great organization being benefited, Metro Caring. So be sure to head to MetroCaring.org to get your tickets. Marty, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. This is really great. Nice to chat with you guys.
Yeah.
Kudos to you dudes for doing all the cool stuff you do. And your boys and your companies. You guys are the new wave.
You blaze the trail.
Putting it really well. There's a lot of people before me, too. So. But it's great that that's our trade. It's just a wonderful thing. And you guys and your dudes are doing such cool stuff.
Thank you.
It's really wonderful. And this place, I mean, it's funny now to drive, like driving here tonight. It seems like just a few years ago, you could have made love in the middle of the street and nobody would have seen it. Now you can't cross the street because there's too much traffic. And so much of beer has been the powerful, and just like the Whip Cube was the catalyst for the, you know, rebirth of lower downtown, beer has played such a huge role in this part of town. And it's incredible. And all the great culture that is falling in, and people like Epic and Rapture and you guys.
That's why beer is such a strong industry, be it, you know, to help the city grow or to help employees find work that they might not have otherwise enjoyed. It's pretty cool. Yeah. Now you can just make love to your beer in the middle of the street. So, why don't we do it? Well, once again, a big thank you to Jesse Mercina and Hunter Condon over here, my co-host for the show. I'm Tristan Chan. This has been the Porchcast. Once again, be sure to follow us on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever device you're using to listen. And also, be sure to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, PorchDrinking.com. And you can follow us at PorchDrinkingCO. One final thank you to First Draft Tap in the Kitchen for hosting us for tonight's episode and also for being a sponsor for the show. If you like pouring your own beer and also trying 40 different types of beer all at once, you can come down here. It's a 4-year-old draft system. It's like an adult version of a froyo shop. It's fantastic. Down here at 26th and Lambert, First Draft Tap in the Kitchen. Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to join us for the next episode of the Porchcast. We'll catch you next time.
Check you later.
Have a good one.